Welcome to the Dementia Research Project. I'm Matt DeRay, and in this podcast, I explore the history, innovation, and champions in and around the world of dementia.
Today's guest is Mike Banville, CEO of AllSpath, a company on a mission to change how we detect Alzheimer's earlier and more accessibly. With a career spent leading and growing companies across healthcare and technology, Mike now brings his leadership to a cause that affects millions around the world. Mike, how are you?
I'm good. How are you, Matthew? Great to be on the show.
Thank you very much for your time. When I came across what AllSpath is doing, I just was immediately very hopeful. And I think a lot of what your mission statement was really resonated with me. So before we jump into AllSpath, do you mind sharing a bit about your background leading up to AllSpath and what set you up for what you're doing now?
Yeah, so a great question. And I think I'll connect that's also what attracted me to working with AllSpath. So, this mission around democratizing access to diagnostics, in particular, a blood test to detect Alzheimer's, potentially very early. I know we'll get into that. But in terms of my journey here, after working with larger public companies, I've worked with private companies, the private sector, a lot of startup stage companies. Usually they have some traction in the market, but need help really becoming a real company and scaling commercially. And I did a lot of that within a larger public company context. And it's been very, very fun to apply that to startups in general, but also now my second one in the healthcare space.
Do you mind sharing just a general overview of what AllSpath does?
Yeah, so we're a provider of diagnostic tools for, in particular, Alzheimer's, but also more broadly around other related dementia. In particular, though, we have a proprietary capability, an antibody, which when developed in a blood test, I know we're going to go deeper into that as we get through the conversation, but when developed in a blood test is a very highly accurate indicator of the development of Alzheimer's, even before symptoms show with a patient. So our focus is on Alzheimer's and the diagnostic side in terms of providing a best-in-class blood test to help identify the disease, ideally in its very early stages.
And do you mind sharing just a lay of the land in terms of diagnostics and how this blood test compares to other existing means of detecting and diagnosing dementia right now?
Yeah. So as you probably know, that the search for a cure and the related diagnostics for Alzheimer's has been a long journey, decades long journey to try to solve this disease. So the current methods are PET scan as one method, and spinal fluid tap is the second method. Those are highly accurate, but expensive. Sometimes systems reimburse for them. Sometimes they don't, in terms of health systems covering some of the costs. They're not always accessible, depending on which part of the world you're in, which country you're in, the characteristics of it. And they're generally very, very expensive. So those are the traditional ways, highly accurate though. So I want to be clear, very accurate ways to diagnose the disease, but they do have some shortcomings, which will have challenges as we potentially scale up the populations to be tested around the world.
You mentioned the cost factor, just for a sense of size and scale, like how much more cost effective ballpark, would you think this blood test, and in particular, your blood test, compared to these PET scans and lumbar punctures and whatnot?
Yeah, so the costs for the blood tests are still evolving, but I'll give you a kind of rough idea in terms of what we're seeing, because it's going to vary widely by country. There'll be countries like China where it'll be probably much lower price for the test, whereas in the US, it may be a higher price for the test. So it depends on the country and the health system and the characteristics of that. But, the legacy test, like a PET scan, are, you know, costing the thousands of dollars, this, the blood test can cost them the tens and hundreds of dollars. So it's a pretty massive difference. Again, I'm giving a very wide range because that's really, we're in the early days of seeing the test used in a clinical setting. It's been largely, the blood test has largely been used in research setting, but we're now right in the midst of that shift to clinical use of the test. And that's when we get into pricing, reimbursement by the health system, et cetera, depending on the market, the country that we're in.
And could you explain how that integration with the clinical infrastructure works? What are some of the gaps and what are some of the opportunities right now when it comes to infrastructure, at least in the US and what you are seeing?
Well, yeah, we can talk about, maybe we could talk about some of the markets in Asia as well, but I think the way, so our business model is meant to very much embrace and engage the healthcare system and infrastructure, the way it works. So that, again, democratizing access. We want to get access for as many people, especially as new therapeutics, drugs come out on the horizon that can actually be administered to folks with and without symptoms. So our model is one where we license our antibody to the diagnostic companies. Some of them are multinationals, like Roche Diagnostics is a partner. They're one of the largest ones in the world. Beckman Coulter is another partner. And then also on the research side of the industry, companies like Quanterix that have a very wide footprint in research around Alzheimer's and dementia or neurological disorders and diseases. So we license our antibody to those companies. They go through the regulatory approvals in each of the markets they operate, and they commercialize it. So the reason we did it that way is because if you want to democratize access, you've got to get it low friction, if you will, if that makes sense, through the healthcare system. And those large multinational diagnostic companies really drive the development, commercialization, regulatory approvals, and then use of the test like this. So we're embracing the system so we can get the test, you know, out in the market better, faster, with our partners like Roche, Beckman, and others that will be, and where we're going to be announcing several others over the course of the second half of this year as well. So we're trying to get that in their hands, agreements in place with them as partners so they can commercialize and roll out the tests as quickly as possible. That's our model. It's a little bit different than developing a test, having your own lab, building a sales force to go sell it. That's a much slower approach, at least in our view, than engaging with the diagnostics infrastructure that is there in most countries with those multinational companies I mentioned, but also that in some markets, there are going to be large local diagnostic companies as well that have machines and hospitals and labs, et cetera, too, that we'll work with.
Right.
That makes sense? It's kind of a different model.
Right. And in that sense, a lot of these companies, they would be the ones who are front-facing with the health system, those in primary care settings, so to speak. And I suppose when you think about this, and at least when you talk to these partners, how do you envision the test being used in primary care in the future? Is it a routine blood test every time grandpa or grandma is getting a cholesterol checked or annual checkup? Or how do you envision that? Or at least what's the vision you talk to alongside your partners?
Yeah, so that is evolving as we speak. So that we see the, it's called the addressable market thing we think of as we look at it from a business standpoint, but I think it's also the patient population in terms of when, how and when it will be appropriate to test different populations. So in the past, so AllSpath was founded in 2020. And so over that 5-year period, the populations that were using the blood test were through research. So research institutes, academia, et cetera, that were trying to run studies to potentially find cures for the disease or to look for correlations between different diseases, et cetera. So past 5 years has been largely about that. What we're shifting to as we leave this year and head over the next few years, at least our view, is a world where we now have therapeutics, drugs on the market, in particular, Kisunla and Leqembi would be the two, and talk about who makes those and all that, but those are the two that are approved fully approved in the US, approved, one of them approved in Europe. China has approved both. I think Japan has as well. So those drugs are now approved for use with patients that have mild cognitive impairment. So are showing cognitive issues. So we're in a phase now where you've got therapeutics that could be administered if someone takes the blood test and is showing that they're on a path toward getting Alzheimer's, but it's a symptom showing. The next population that we see coming is probably later this decade, 28, 29 timeframe, is prevention. That's the big population. And I'll get back to primary care because I want to talk about that because there's very different levels of understanding, education that's needed to work with each of these populations. But I just want to go through how we're thinking about the populations. So we do, based on public data out there from the therapeutic companies, the drug companies, there is a good case and potential probability that we'll see prevention therapies on the market toward the end of this decade. That's a major breakthrough. Now, I don't work with those companies, so I'm not guaranteeing that. I'm just saying, you know, as we look at the published data, that we're an important piece of that because you need to have large-scale diagnostics. If you have a prevention therapy in the market that gets regulatory approval, and it's the same two drugs that I just mentioned, they're used for people with impairment now, but they're in clinical trials for prevention cases, people that don't have symptoms yet, but are developing the plaque on the brain. You need to test at scale to do that because those populations are people 50 to 80 years old. So you think about that population, that in China, for example, I think that's over 400 million people in China that are in that age range that if there's prevention therapies on the market, you need the diagnostics to test them at that scale. So that's kind of how we see the patient population building. I use China as an example, but every country and market in the world that you pick that subpopulation of people that are 50, 80. In terms of primary care, this would be typically used in tandem or right after a cognitive assessment. I think you've interviewed folks that are kind of digital cognitive assessments, but there's the in-person. It's a very laborious assessment that can take several hours. It's very difficult to train and administer. And I think it was one of the interviews I saw you did, you know, there's a whole industry of digital cognitive assessment companies that are popping up to be able to streamline, make that smarter, make it faster. But if you did an assessment like that, a next logical step pending the result of the assessment would be a blood test. So it's meant to go in tandem there. In terms of the frequency, that's a hard one to estimate yet. I think the standards are still being developed in terms of how frequently a test would be administered. You know, whether it's every year, like your lipid panel to test your cholesterol and other measures like that, or it could be more like a colonoscopy that could be every 3 to 5 years. You know, we're learning still what the right frequency is, but definitely the upfront screening, and there is a potential for retesting and also for patients to go on the drugs to be monitored at some frequency as well to test to see if the plaque, the amyloid plaque is reducing, because those drugs are anti-amyloid drugs. They're meant to take the plaque out and restore the brain to its original state. So I've given you a lot there, but I'll pause, see if that makes sense in terms of both the evolution of the patient base that can be diagnosed, and then also how we see it fitting at the primary care, or, you know, I know we didn't talk much about neurology yet, but we could talk about that as well.
Yeah, no, it makes perfect sense. And it goes to, I think, like one of your previous statements around that movement from reactive to proactive care, right? Next question I have, Mike, is really around maybe closer to where I am. Areas where there's probably more limited infrastructure. So whether it's diagnostics, whether it's specialists, neurologists and whatnot, how could something like this really just leapfrog these systemic barriers?
Yeah, well, I think different countries in Asia are really good example where, you know, using China as an example, that 400 plus million people, a large chunk of that, I don't have the number right off the top of my head, but a large chunk of that do not live in urban cities where you would have more likely have the lab infrastructure, the hospital infrastructure, be able to get them tested with a traditional intravenous test. So never mind a PET scan or a spinal fluid tap. Those are even limited in the urban areas in a lot of countries in Asia. We're seeing at least the initial focus of just leapfrogging the legacy testing methods because their machines are not there at any scale, and getting a blood test out as a way to get to patient populations faster. So I think it because again that accessibility and the scalability of it from that make it a very powerful tool to get in the hands of people faster and much more widely than you could with the other methods. Again, the other method, we're about the same accuracy with our blood tests as PET scan and spinal fluid, but price, accessibility, invasiveness, et cetera, all very different. So yeah, I think you're spot on. With countries that don't have those big machines like PET scans in place at any scale, and even in the US, we're going to hit limitations because of there's only so many PET scan machines to test. If you're trying to test millions of people rather than hundreds or thousands of people, that's a big difference. So you need something that's more easily administered, like a blood test.
And based on your partners' feedback, at least like the feedback you have from partners who get it directly from physicians and health systems, what is their point of view on this? Because it reduces a lot of burden, it increases the volume of patients they can attend to. What's been some of the anecdotal feedback?
Yeah, I think, you know, so we're excited about the partnership. I'm talking the clinical side now, like with Roche and Beckman Coulter and some further that are coming soon. They do very heavy due diligence before they pick a partner like us to work with. First on what's the demand for the blood test going to be? Also, is this p-tau217 protein or what the biomarker we measure, is that the right test? And then they get to, are they going to build them all themselves internally, or can they, through partnership, bring components or the test together to deliver it to their patient base on their machines? So the diligence they do, that was one of the things that was really interesting and exciting to me as I contemplated joining the company this year. Those companies are doing heavy diligence to and making big decisions that are multi-billion dollar decisions when they pick a flagship test like this. So that gives us great pride and confidence that this is going to be a test that's going to be widely used. It's going to be around. It's going to stay around as a flagship test and be widely available on the diagnostic machines that are in a lot of the hospitals, labs, clinics, et cetera, across the world. So yeah, I think the early evidence from the partners is they picked us. So that we're very excited about that. They could have picked other options. They could have developed the test a different way. We're continually getting selected, but they're investing in the Alzheimer's industry now, and they're investing in this particular blood test. So they also have a belief that the demand will come, and that the important piece that the therapeutics, the drugs are on the horizon as well. They work very closely with the big drug companies. So, you know, they're clued into what's happening there. So, you know, they do very significant diligence before they make a decision, and they're moving ahead on scale.
And just from my understanding, you mentioned other options. I know there are other teams in different markets out there also exploring blood tests, right? And I know you specifically focus on one protein. But could you just explain, how do you think of the competitive landscape? Is it a race, or is everybody just trying to freaking find a diagnostic that does the job, right?
Yeah. I don't know if it's a race per se, but I think there's different business models. You had asked about our model, kind of how do we get into the market and get this accessible as quickly as possible? And that's, you work with the key players that have all the infrastructure, the machines that run the blood tests, right? That to give us a result back. So we do think our business model is unique. There are other companies that for sure that are having or going to develop a p-tau217 test. We have I say this because I think the world of our advisory board, but our scientific advisory board is a who's who of this space. And they're really our eyes and ears to understand, okay, what else is coming? Is there a different test that's going to come that might hit us sideways, if you will, and disrupt? Are there complementary biomarkers in development that we should be looking at? And so we stay kind of on the leading edge. We talk with our advisory board about digital cognitive assessment, how those fit or not with our tests. So they're really critical for us. We talk to them very regularly to get their view on what's coming next. So I don't say like as an excuse that there's no competition, but we stay very current and really kind of current on the next frontier. And I think our advisory board, if you talk to any of them, would say this is p-tau 217 test really is here to stay as a flagship test. There will likely be other biomarkers that are there to complement it and help increase precision for better diagnosis, especially as the new drugs come on. So we're keeping a close eye on that, but we're very focused now on getting this, our test, the protein, p-tau 217, as you said, up and running and in place and test developed with these large partners that we're working with.
On the partnership side of things, how do these typical partnership discussions go? I speak as somebody who's hosting a podcast and really hopes somebody in the community in this part of the world listens to this and tries to call you up, Mike.
Yeah. And by the way, we get lots of patients and doctors that reach out to us directly. So even though we're delivering tests through partners, we talk to folks all the time. So please do encourage people to reach out. That we're very happy to talk to them. And there's a big education component that's important at a patient level and at a clinician level, a doctor level, before this really ramp up. But in terms of what we look for in partners, I'll get back to that question. I think, you know, so they typically, they're testing multiple antibodies on their platform as they try to develop the test. Number one thing is consistent accuracy. Well, accuracy and consistency of the accuracy maybe is a better way to put it. So we want to make sure that anyone who's using our antibody developing a test is getting the same level of accuracy in that PET scan, spinal fluid tap range, that same range that we're seeing from an accuracy and consistency. So that's really important. And they share their results back with us as they're doing that. Our particular antibody has proven very adaptable across different machines, which is one of, I think, a unique and really important attribute of it. So that's what enables us to license it to so many different companies ultimately, is that it tends to hold up its accuracy on their machine. So I think accuracy and consistency of it is really important, because we do not want to drop quality. For example, like in China, one of our partners talked to us about one of the issues is currently our test is not fully rolled out in China yet, but it will be. One of the issues is there are p-tau 217 tests that are approved, but their accuracy is not very good. And therefore, the doctors don't trust the results, which is slowing down the assessment of people and enrollment of people in some of the drugs that are approved that they could be on to help them. So high accuracy is maintaining that kind of gold standard is really important. I think the other part is understanding how they're going to roll the test out, where they're going to roll it out. That's consistent with what we're trying to do. But generally, these are more global type licenses that we're working with our partners on. So these big multinationals want to roll it out in every market they can. That takes time, depending on regulatory processes and such, but they know how to do that. That's what they do for a living, is develop tests on their machine and roll them out across the world.
I'm closing in on my last couple of questions, Mike. What are you hopeful for in the next year, 2 years? What are some of the goals and targets you hope to achieve?
Yeah, well, I think I'll talk for us and for the industry, maybe in two parts, because I think they go hand in hand. But for us, I think it's getting our antibody built into as many diagnostic platforms as we can. So increasing the number of partnerships beyond the really great ones we have with Roche and Beckman Coulter and Quanterix and others, really scaling that out so that the tests, when the populations are ready to be tested, it's ready to go and accessible. And it's a no brainer. get the blood test. It's available on whatever machine a lab, clinic, hospital has, it can get run at that very high quality. So I think that for us over the next several years, that's a very big focus. For the industry, thinking a few years out on the time frame you gave, I think we will be excited to see, like, we're coming out the other side on these prevention clinical trials for the drugs, and that we have really kind of line of sight of prevention therapies coming out and toward the end of the decade. I mean, that's what will really tackle this disease. The diagnostics being ready when the prevention therapies come out, to have those two things together. So then we can test very large populations, and then we can put them on medicine that will cure them, will prevent the progression of this awful disease that affects so many.
Actually, your last statement made me think of something I probably should have asked earlier. In terms of your blood tests, how do you think about it relative to different cultural groups? Because everybody's got different genetics, and how does that work in relation to your particular blood test? Is that something the partners handle, or could you explain that process?
Yeah, so I'm not a scientist, so I'm probably not the right person to dive too deep into that, but I think there'll be a lot of clinician training and education that has to happen. And, you know, we'll be part of that for sure. Like I said, we talk to clinicians and patients very regularly, but the large scale education to adopt the test, use it appropriately, I think along the lines of what you're asking, and interpret it appropriately, there's going to be a lot of education to happen. So that'll be that. Our partners will have a role in that. That'll be large, as they call them in the US, KOLs, key opinion leaders. It could be like the Alzheimer's Association has been starting to develop guidelines for use of a blood test, clinician guidelines. So there's organizations like that'll be working on that as well. So I think it's going to take the whole industry really putting that educational support together to get the test used at the right time and interpreted correctly, and then referred on to a neurologist or whoever the specialist is that has to take the patient on the next phase of the journey.
Mike, thank you so much. You've been very generous with your time. How can people reach out to you? They want to learn more, or they want to explore any form of partnerships?
Yeah, like I said, we're very happy to talk to people. I think via our website is the best way. Allspath.bio would be the best way to reach out. You can communicate us through that. There's a good amount of education on there. We're actually just about to release a whole new website later this month. So there's going to be even more educational resources there. But yeah, that's definitely the best way to find us is through our website, and definitely to communicate with us. We'd be very happy to chat with people, like I said, patients, clinicians, industry that want to have a dialogue with us.
Fantastic. Before I let you go, is there anything I should have asked that I didn't ask, which you'd like to talk about?
That's a good question. I don't think it's really something you should have asked, but I don't know if everyone fully understands the scale of this disease and how many people it touches, not just the patient, but the families. You mentioned your personal connection. I have one of those from one of my grandparents years ago. It's really struck me as I've taken on this role, just the personal connection that just about everyone I talk to has to this disease in some way, maybe very directly with a parent or a sibling, or it could be a close friend, but it's almost without fail that people have a connection to this disease, unfortunately. And, I don't think it's a question, but it's just an observation that this is a massive scale disease that is going to get worse with rapidly aging populations around the world. I mean, our aging population, we're aging faster. I'm now into this 50-day range, and when the blood test is ready, I'm going to take the test when it's ready for prevention use. So I don't always know that people know the true scale of the disease, but I mean, this is one of our great health challenges. There are others out there, no question, but in terms of an not yet fully solved health challenge, it's hard to point at others that are at the scale of this that we need to tackle. So we're just very happy and proud to be part of that and really want to be a key piece of that, that system that is going to drive solving this disease. So again, not a question. I just think it's kind of a, I try to connect this to personal, because it is a very personal issue for many people. And then connect that, like, we've got to go tackle this disease, and it's going to take all the pieces we talked about in this call.
Thank you. Thank you, Mike, for the work you're doing, you and your team are doing.
Thank you for the time. I really enjoyed talking to you.
Likewise.
Thanks for listening. If you want more of these type of stories, interviews, and guests, please follow the Dementia Research Project wherever you get your podcasts. Onwards and upwards.